It is 8:32, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Joff Parrish, co-editor at Eat This State. Good morning.
Hey, does that mean we get the 2 minutes back at the end of the show?
No, but you can hang out 2 minutes longer.
Can we like invoice the station for them?
No one's going to know what the heck you're talking about.
It's just a thought. I don't know.
Nothing new. All right.
Well, it's not just the station that's victimized there.
All right. Let's jump into what we got this week. Now that everyone's confused further.
Yes.
Starting with local, the county committee at the county council has come up with something for the sheriff's department.
Yes. It was kind of a slow week for local news, but this was a very encouraging development. Committee for county council voted unanimously to adopt one of the Blue Ribbon Commission or panel recommendations that came out a few weeks ago on the King County Sheriff's Office. One of them was to create an office for civilian oversight of the Sheriff's Department because there have been so many problems in recent years under both Reichert and Sue Rahr with basically rogue officers, police abuses, shootings, particularly of non-white people, et cetera, et cetera. Glory be, the county council is moving forward on that one. The committee unanimously voted to create an Office of Law Enforcement Oversight. That vote will go to the full council on Monday, October 9th. So that'll be 9 days away, basically a week from Monday. It's expected to pass, but the King County Officers Guild, I think it's called, basically the union for sheriff's deputies and so forth, has vowed to fight this, and under the collective bargaining agreement, they probably can. They probably can delay it at least for the year or so until the current contract expires and the county has to renegotiate a contract with the union. So we may not see this immediately, but it will have the force of law, and then it'll be up to the county to go negotiate the terms of the office with the sheriff's union.
It surprises me because I'm just so used to not having very high expectations from blue ribbon panels.
That's very true. And, Sims has already said that the other reform recommendations that the panel made, which were actually quite good, that there's simply not enough money in the county budget to adapt all of them. So, your low expectations for that panel are probably justified in terms of what'll come out of the council eventually. But this one seemed to have been a priority for a lot of the council members, and it is expected to pass on the 9th.
All right. And moving to the state level, I-933 appears to have a couple reports that came out.
Yeah, this is the property rights initiative that was modeled on Measure 37 in Oregon, which has been such a disaster down there. It's cost Oregon a tremendous amount of money. The state has been flooded with thousands of claims by property owners who are claiming essentially that environmental or other regulations, for instance, what would in this area be called critical use areas or critical environmental areas, are costing them money because it devalues the property or it prevents them from doing a particular use that would help make them money, et cetera, et cetera. And they get to bill the state for that now or to get a waiver for from the environmental regulations. So Oregon's being hard-pressed to meet all this. In Washington State, it would probably be worse because there is no provision in state law for local governments to grant waivers. So it would have to go to the filing of claims process, at least under current law. And so a study from the University of Washington came out this week saying that that measure, if it passes, would cost $8 billion. That's billion with a B, dollars to state taxpayers in the next 5 years. Another study that came out last week by the state government in Olympia said that it would cost somewhere between $7 and $9 billion over the next 5 years. So, very similar numbers. And of course, the Yes on 933 folks are trying to spin this, saying that they're biased studies, yada, yada. But it is very clear that this measure, in addition to being an environmental disaster, would also be extremely, extremely expensive for state taxpayers, probably result in a lot of cuts to social services, highway and construction and maintenance, all the sorts of infrastructure projects, etc. Let's hope that the state's voters have the good sense to reject this, because it is by far the most dangerous thing that's going to be coming up on the November ballot.
All right. Well, speaking of dangerous and moving to national, the House and the Senate both voted this week that torture is now an American value.
Yeah, this was really frightening and disgraceful and so forth. And, of course, Michael Ratner on Counterspin a few minutes ago covered a lot of this, not only torture, but also the abolition of habeas corpus and several other provisions in these bills that the House passed on Wednesday and the Senate passed on Thursday that are just plain disastrous. There were a few minor differences between the House and Senate versions. Republicans are caucusing this week to iron out those differences in a conference committee, and then they'll have to go back to the House and Senate for final approval, probably by the end of the weekend. This is going to happen very rapidly. Obviously, they have the votes to pass it. And one of the reasons it's passed, you don't just blame the Republicans. Harry Reid, the Democratic Senate leader, cut a deal in which he waived the right for a floor debate, in other words, the right to filibuster, in exchange for being able to get a vote on a couple of amendments to the Senate version of the bill that were clearly not going to pass. So, in exchange for making symbolic brownie points, Reid essentially foreclosed the ability of 40 Democrats to mount a filibuster. Now, this may have been strategic. Reid may have felt that there weren't 40 Democrats willing to mount a filibuster, and he didn't want to risk the embarrassment to the party, and that would have been pretty sad. But yeah, they should have filibustered this. I mean, this is a bill that, you know, not only overturns centuries of legal precedent and not only exposes American soldiers to greater risk overseas, but it endangers all of us. It really does. It undermines what little is left of the moral authority of the United States, and for that matter, all Western democracies in the rest of the world. It's just really, really disastrous. That said, it shouldn't surprise anyone. You look at what's been going on, and what we've been talking about in this program over the last 5 years since 9/11, with the secret CIA prisons and gulag in Eastern Europe and scattered elsewhere around the world, the torture that has gone on systematically, not just as Amo Gray, but all across Iraq, as we talked about in this program last week, in Afghanistan, in those CIA prisons, in Guantanamo, etc. We're talking probably tens of thousands of prisoners that have been tortured in the last 5 years. And that in itself is a tradition of this country, going back to the 1980s in Central America, where we, essentially trained torture states in several Central American countries, the dirty wars in South America in the 60s and 70s. The only real difference with this is that, the CIA, we're probably responsible, at least partially so, for the death squads that are going on in Iraq right now, which, as I talked about last week, extensively use torture before they kill their victims. The only real difference between the CIA trainers now and the CIA trainers, under the Johnson administration, and he was a Democrat, are that now the real life experience that they bring to those trainings is quote unquote legal. But this is not something that should have surprised anybody as being a quote unquote American value. We've been doing this for a long time. The difference under the Bush administration is they brag about it. Of course, they officially deny it, too, but, they're playing semantic games when they talk about aggressive interrogation techniques. When Bush down the road is arrested for crimes against humanity, I wonder how willing he's going to be to undergo any of those aggressive interrogation techniques.
All right. In addition to that, the House passed the wiretap.
Yeah, the same day as the Senate vote, so it didn't get very much attention. But on Thursday, the House passed the surveillance bill that I talked about a little bit last week, that an amendment had been made that made the bill even worse. Rather than you know, giving the White House latitude to order wiretaps on as many Americans as it liked for no particular reason when the United States had been attacked. And now it can do so when there is a quote-unquote imminent threat of attack. Of course, you know, what imminent means, what threat means, who defines it, and what happens to those wiretaps when that threat has supposedly subsided is, you know, basically undefined or left to the discretion of the White House. It's a very, very bad bill also. Just as bad in its own way as the torture habeas corpus legislation that passed this week. And it's getting very, very little attention, as did the torture bill until, you know, the three Republicans bolted from the committee a week or two ago, and you know there was all the, you know, basically sports coverage of the of the tussle between Warner and McCain and Graham in the White House. Well, there was very little coverage of the substance of the bill. With the wiretap bill, again, there's been very little coverage, and unfortunately, that's likely to remain until if there's any kind of close vote in the Senate coming up. That's going to come up very soon. So keep an eye on that one, and you know, make sure that Murray and Cantwell know that this is a very bad idea, and encourage Murray and Cantwell to encourage Harry Reid and the Democratic Senate leadership to not forego the ability to filibuster on this one, and encourage them to lead a filibuster themselves.
All right. Well, sticking with things that didn't get much coverage, there was a national campaign that launched last week.
Okay. Yes, something called the Declaration of Peace, which is being backed by a number of national peace groups, many of them faith-based. I heard quite a bit about this when I was back in D.C. a couple weeks ago. It launched last week with a flurry of arrests at a number of locations around D.C., and then all over the country. There have been something like 375 actions so far over the last week, including one up at Indian Island near Port Townsend a week ago today, last Saturday, in which 37 people were arrested. There were about 500 people present there. It was an enormously successful action at a venue that most people are completely unaware of as being a military facility. But apparently, this is one of the key shipping points for, I believe, it's armaments that go to Iraq. I think some of the organizers would like to make that a focus of future protests as well. So, you know, be aware of that one, and let's take a trip up in the island sometime soon. But this is going to be an ongoing campaign for the next few weeks at least, where they're trying to encourage civil disobedience actions against the war in Iraq, presumably also against a prospective war with Iran, and you know, we'll talk about that in a little while. It should be supported, and as you say, it got zero media coverage in mainstream media this week.
All right. Well, the isms we have, capitalism, communism, socialism, and now one that seems to be growing in popularity, cronyism.
Yeah, we talked last week about an internal Department of Education report from their inspector general that showed that the Reading First program under No First Left Behind was basically awarding contracts to Bush cronies, companies that are favored by the Republican Party, and that favor the Republican Party. Well, on the heels of that, we have a report in Think Progress this week that, and I'll just read the summary of it here, that an investigation by HUD, the HUD Inspector General, has revealed that HUD Secretary Alfonso Jackson instructed his staff to award HUD contracts to President Bush's political allies and withhold them from his political opponents, i.e., companies that have contributed to Democrats. The HUD Inspector General has refused to make the report public. This smacks of the same sort of cronyism that we saw at the Department of Education, that obviously we've seen in the awarding of contracts for Katrina reconstruction and Iraq reconstruction. It seems very, and not to mention the national energy policy, it seems very much a pattern within the Bush administration. In addition to their colossal disregard for human life and the Constitution, they're really behaving in a lot of ways like like a third world dictatorship, where there's, you know, a lot of cronyism, a lot of people surrounding them that are getting, in illegal ways, are getting rich, and they're making up their laws as they go along. It's really quite frightening that we're sliding in that direction very rapidly.
Well, one thing that did make headlines this week was the leaking of a national intel report.
Yes, the National Intelligence Estimate that actually was written in April 2006, so that it's already, 7 months old now, 6 months old now. And the three pages of that report, which were themselves redacted, of a much longer report, what got headlines was that it concluded, really the obvious, if you've been listening to this program or any other, you know, rational observer over the last 5 years, or even just reading newspaper headlines, that the war in Iraq and in general the conduct of the global war on terror has made the threat of terrorism worse. Well, duh. When you enrage, hundreds of millions of people, chances are more of them are going to become jihadists than you can possibly kill with a stick. At the same time, the reason the White House, and remember, this is the most secretive White House in American history, the reason they were willing to leak this little bitty part of the NIE was they figured they could spin that because, you know, they've been saying that the global war on terror is a success, and so they figure if they keep repeating that often enough, somebody's going to believe it. But one of the things that the NIE also said was that if the U.S. leaves Iraq, the violence in Iraq will get worse. Well, it's kind of hard to imagine it's getting worse at this point. And as we'll talk about in a little bit, most Iraqis do not agree with that assessment. But the real germane question here is, what about the 97% of that NIE that was unreleased? What does it say? And if the public part of it is critical of the conduct of the global war on terror, I'll bet there are some gems that the White House is terrified if that ever becomes public in terms of a rational assessment of what foreign policy in the United States has done to American safety in the last 5 years. Now, this was compiled by the consensus of 16 different U.S. intelligence agencies. So it's really the best and most experienced professional minds in the U.S. government are coming to this conclusion. Really kind of frightening to consider how critical they might be of what we've done since 2001.
I bet a lot of people didn't know we had 16 intelligence agencies.
Probably more than that.
All right, moving along, more reports. This one from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yeah, and this one, another one where the government is finally discovering the obvious, something scientists have been saying for many years and predicting on their computer models, that there's an association between hurricanes and global warming. That is, as the oceans warm, and this makes total sense, it feeds more moisture into tropical storms. They develop into bigger and longer lasting and more powerful and more destructive hurricanes. Well, there's a problem with this, which is that the White House has spiked the report. NOAA was set to make it public in, I believe, June, maybe May, as part of a media kit, I believe it was. According again to reports that the White House decided that that established science just wasn't convenient, and so they forbade its release. I don't know what the White House has against science, but it's something pretty serious. It's kind of bizarre.
I think they've got Mr. Science at Guantanamo.
It could be. And they're connecting physics experiments with thumbscrews and fingernails.
All right. Pleasant thought. Abramoff, update.
Yeah, very quickly. A congressional report has been released that really ties Abramoff much more closely to the Bush White House. In fact, there was well over 100 meetings between Abramoff, between Grover Nordquist and Ralph Reed, both of whom have been very heavily involved in the Abramoff investigation, and White House officials. And there were at least 10 different meetings between Abramoff himself and Karl Rove. So when the White House says, oh, we don't know who this guy is, gosh, that's really too bad that all that happened, they're lying through their teeth, and the investigation continues.
All right, moving along to international, Iran.
A very, very frightening series of reports that have come out in the last 10 days or so that suggest that the White House is at least giving itself the option of and actively preparing for launching a preemptive war against Iran before November 7th, that is, in the next 5 weeks. Among those reports, the Eisenhower Strike Force, a group of ships that include a nuclear-armed aircraft carrier Eisenhower and a number of other vessels, have sailed unexpectedly, or are actually getting ready to this week, out of the Norfolk Naval Base in Virginia. They've been given the order. This is a series of vessels that basically has been in port undergoing reconstruction for the last several years. They weren't scheduled to be deployed until next month at the earliest, maybe as late as next spring, and suddenly they've been given the rush order to go and park themselves off the western coast of Iran. You don't put valuable vessels like that within range of enemy fire, and that western coast is packed with silkworm anti-ship missiles, Chinese weaponry, unless you're planning to do something. Tomorrow, a fleet of vessels equipped for mining harbors is set to sail, again for the Persian Gulf. There have been reports, for example, there was an article by former Senator Gary Hart this week, who is considered an expert on national defense. That's what he's been active in since he left the Senate, saying that he expects a war before November 7th, and listed a number of other reasons why, basically involving types of military deployments, the fact that there's been a new stop-loss order for troops in Iraq, and tours of duty have been extended there, to try and build up the troop size there. This coming, with elections coming up, of course, in past elections, the White House has tried to draw down the number of troops to make it look like we're winning the war in Iraq. Of course, maybe now they figure that the gas prices are doing the same thing. But, it's just a very, very worrisome development. And, of course, we also had the spectacle last week of Bush addressing the United Nations. And this was something that most media reports talked about, how conciliatory he was toward Iraq. No. Couple of things about that. Number one, Bush directly addressing the Iranian people and talking about how, their leaders are not operating in their best interest by trying to pursue weapons of mass destruction. Of course, the nuclear program is the one thing that the hardliners in Iran enjoy tremendous popular support, even from their critics, about. Iranians overwhelmingly support the nuclear program in Iran. And the audience wasn't Iranian anyway, because they know George Bush is lying, and they've seen what all that commitment to peace and freedom and democracy that Bush has done in neighboring Iraq. It's like, how's that working out for you, Iraq? The real target of that was us. It was, Americans saying, Iranians really crave this. They have an unusual affection for having cluster bombs dropped on them, and so we're just giving them what they want. That was sort of the subliminal message. Bush also started talking about negotiations. Bush never talks about negotiations unless he's gotten close enough to launching an attack that you have to go through, the formal step of going through intentionally futile diplomatic gestures so that you can point to them and say that diplomacy doesn't work. And in case all this sounds familiar, these are exactly the steps that he was taking in the war, in the run-up to the war against invasion of Iraq, when he had already set the date and firmed up the plans for the invasion. So it's really up to us in the next just handful of weeks to try and stop an attack on Iran. With very frightening consequences. It's insane that this administration would risk that many lives, not just in Iran, but in Afghanistan, and Iraq, and Lebanon, and Syria, and Israel, and Palestine, and Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, because that's what's going to happen. It will turn into a regional conflagration, if not World War III, that they would risk that many lives just to pursue electoral advantage on November 7th. Appalling.
and Iraq?
Several things very quickly. A British report that the British military is urging the UK to pull out of Iraq entirely and focus on Afghanistan, which of course is also going very badly, something media hasn't paid much attention to here. A new poll released this week in Iraq that I made mention to that an overwhelming number, 80% think that the United States provokes more violence than it prevents in Iraq, meaning, of course, that, if we left, things would get better. 60% think that attacks on U.S. soldiers are justified. That's up from 46% just in January. So we're getting less and less popular there. And 75% think that the U.S. plans to keep bases in Iraq permanently, even though Congress has banned that now. And there was a Washington Post report this week that the State Department poll shows that 65% of people in Baghdad favor an immediate U.S. withdrawal. We're just not really very loved by Iraqis right now. And finally, the Congressional Research Service announced this week that Iraq is now costing $2 billion a week to taxpayers, twice what it was in 2003. And of course, the biggest factor on that is the increase in spending on base construction. How about that? And the military itself it has now, since 2001, spent $500 billion on the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. And finally, related to that, the House very quietly this week passed another $70 billion in appropriations for Iraq and Afghanistan, and a record $448 billion for the Pentagon in 2007.
All right, quickly, events.
Yeah, just a couple of quick mentions. Sustainable Ballard is happening tomorrow from 11 to 5 at Ballard Community Park, a new park at 57th and 23rd Northwest, just north of beautiful downtown Ballard. And on Friday night, the Social Justice Fund, what used to be ATR, a really cool outfit based here in Seattle, is having an annual dinner. They're bringing in a number of very good national experts on immigration. Tickets for that, you can find the information at socialjusticefund.org.
All right, talking with Job Parrish, co-editor of Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State is a state of mind, really. You can find it anywhere you need. Oh, never mind. It's a community newspaper. It comes out every couple of weeks, produced by volunteers, and you can find it wherever you find free publications, periodicals, King County Library System, cafes, wherever. It's also available on the web, as are all of our back issues over the last 10-plus years, www.eatthestate.org. And if you have comments, questions, tips, whatever, 206-719-6947, and a mechanized operator will be standing by.